Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
We have two guests today, one you've heard about and one you haven't. Our first guest is publisher of cdcgamingreports.com and a frequent guest on this show, Jeffrey Compton. Jeffrey Compton, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Glad to be here again.
Before we get to Jeffrey, we've received a few questions from listeners sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. The first is for Richard. This is from a player who lives in Utah, where they don't have casinos. He has had limited experience in blackjack, and he's practicing as hard as he can for a Vegas trip in August in the next few weeks. Soon, he's going to be taking a trip to Oklahoma, where they have antes of 50 cents or a dollar to play each hand. He wants real-world practice with counting and wants to know if it's worth to pay to play so he can get to practice. Richard.
Well, absolutely not. It is not worth paying 50 cents a hand in order to practice. But I would say to go by the casino and double check, because the casinos in Oklahoma often have promotions where they don't charge an ante. Some of them regularly don't charge an ante on certain days of the week. And some of them have other types of promotions where the ante isn't there. But if you have to pay 50 cents a hand to practice, no, absolutely not. You know, pay your wife $20 an hour, and that would be cheaper than the 50 cents a hand. You can always stand behind the table and just practice back counting without actually playing the hand. So,
very good.
You know.
All right.
Sounds like Jeffrey had something he wanted to add to that.
No, it was that you're paying your wife $20 an hour. Maybe you're already, you know, I won't go there.
Okay.
It's a family show.
I wish you hadn't. The second question is for me. A man and his two sons were playing three adjacent dollar triple play, five play machines at the Palazzo in Las Vegas. Simultaneously, they each hit a royal flush. They wrote and asked me, what are the odds of that happening? Yes, that's pretty rare, but you can't uniquely figure out the odds of something happening after the fact. You need to set those odds before the fact. For example, let's look at the word simultaneously. What he probably means is they all had their lights blinking at the same time. That's quite a bit different than all three happening within the same tenth of a second or the same hundredth of a second. Also, an event happening once, ever, is not at all the same as it happening at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Also, when people send me what are the odds kind of questions, they often throw in extra things in order to make the number seem bigger. What if all three royals were the same suit? Well, to be sure, they would add that. But they wouldn't say they were all in the same suit, they would say they were all in spades, because that was even rarer than all being in the same suit. Or what if they all held three cards and drew two? Or they all had an ace in the second position, or something. If you look at three royals, you can find something in common, and then after the fact you go, yes, this is what makes it unique. So the more unique things you can find to add it into the problem, the bigger number you can get. There are two separate odds, though, that I am willing to say about this. The first is, when something particularly unusual happens, the odds are decent that you're going to send me or some other gambling authority an email asking what are the odds. And the second thing is that all three of these guys, for as long as they're alive, going to have a favorite story about that magical afternoon in Las Vegas in 2016.
Have you ever hit three Royals in one day in a 24-hour period?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Not since this morning, though.
Oh, okay.
But you were playing 50 or 100 play?
I was playing 100 play.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
They were 10-cent Royals, and there was actually six of them, but they were only $400 a piece.
Oh.
And I've been playing 10 play and been dealt Royals, so that does that count?
That wonderfully counts.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk to our guest. Casinos changing ownership is a fact of life. Let's talk about the changing landscape in casinos in Las Vegas. Station Casinos, now called Red Rock Resorts, bought the Palms Casino. Boyd bought Aliante and the two Las Vegas Cannery properties. In general, consolidating ownership is bad for competition. Players will have fewer separate opportunities. If you get restricted at a casino, now that it means there's a couple more places you're not allowed to play. So, let's look at these individually. Jeffrey Compton. Let's take Boyd's acquisition of Aliante and the two canneries. Is there anything good about this from the player's perspective?
It depends on the player.
Let's assume we have advantage players listening to this show.
Okay. Okay, if we, to them, probably not. I don't think Boyd has a better reputation, which treating, you would know better than I do. But does Boyd have a better reputation than the Cannery or Aliante?
Well, Boyd's machines in video poker, there are better video poker opportunities at Boyd than there are at Cannery.
Okay. Among other things, and
so in that way, it's better.
It would be better, yeah.
But if you were a player who was playing both Sam's Town and the Cannery, and getting two different mailers every month, well,
yeah,
now you're getting only
you're
one.
You're getting less mailers. I don't know. Yeah, I would say there was probably a lot of crossover, extreme amount of crossover between the Cannery, the East Side Cannery, and Sam's Town. How many people were going all the way up to Boyd, which is a totally different experience between the Cannery and Las Vegas and Sam's Town. Okay. I like the management of the Cannery. It was never on my top 10 list. But so yes, it does cut down on opportunity. But if whoever is buying what makes improvements in game selection, overall game selection, makes improvements in the quality of the food, makes improvements in the quality of the air, well then, for 98% of the players who are probably not listening to this program, it would be a better deal.
You don't go to Boyd properties for better buffets. That's just
that's
just
true.
One of the facts of life in Las Vegas.
That's true.
All right. Now there's a new car company from Chinese origin.
Well, wait a minute. Do you have anything to say about the Palms?
I mean, wait. I'm not done with the
Boyd
yet.
You were moving on to some other topic.
No. He wants to make an observation.
Okay.
The Faraday Future is building a plant. They're supposed to hire 4,500 auto workers within 10 years,
mm-hmm.
which will mean several tens of thousands of other workers to run the gas stations and the supermarkets and all the other related things. And the plant will be less than 10 miles away from both the Aliante and the northernmost cannery.
Plus, so, isn't there a new factory going up in North Las Vegas?
That's the one we're talking about.
Oh, okay. I thought there was another one too. The reason the Aliante got into trouble, okay, and stations had to unload it, okay, is because they had, because the area, the real estate bust stopped all constructions of new homes in that area, okay. So that is, the neighborhood is not, you know, one-tenth as long as they thought it would be by this time. The cannery, not so much. But the cannery will probably get an improved player and higher income, and while Aliante will pick up more customers. I think Aliante is a very nice property.
It's a lovely property, but there
might not be stuff for your, you know.
Well, but I think they're running it wrong. They're not running it like it's in the corner of the valley. They're running it like it's the center of the valley, where you have to come in every day to pick up things. If you have a casino like the M, which is in another corner of the valley,
they also make you come every other day to pick up
things. Which is a huge mistake, and they've had to change ownerships. If you make it that if you play at a certain level, you can pick up your mailers and stuff once a month or some such.
The Ramparts, for example, you get so much a week, and you have 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, to pick it up. And
okay.
Either one is one of those 3 days. Plus, they run double points on Monday and something on Tuesday, but you don't have to come in every day for something. Yeah. Okay. And
they have a lot more people living around them.
They have a lot more people living. Well, remember, they're a changed hand. They're in their third ownership. But they used to be owned by the cannery. But right now, and if you go in there.
Oh, way, way, way more than three.
Oh.
Way, way, way more than three.
Whatever. right now, you go in there, and, I mean, it looks like heaven's waiting room. But they do a good job in capturing the upper-heeled Sun City crowd.
All right. Now, Red Rock buying the Palms. Anything good about this from the player's perspective?
Well, somebody pointed out to me today at breakfast, you realize that Stations originally owned a piece of the Palms.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. And so, to me, I look at it as they're going to do Red Rock. It's going to be Red Rock, but by the strip. Run very similarly to how they run the Red Rock property.
I hope that's true and that it's not the Palace Station.
No. I think they picked that up because it was a... they really don't want a strip property, but it's off the strip. It really works for them when you think about it.
Hmm.
And now, how it will work with people who can't play at Stations, can probably no longer play at the Palms, or with other issues, I can't say. But if they're smart, if Stations does not want to commit the problems they had when they bought the Fiesta, Bob and I sat in a meeting one time where they talked about Stations had gone through, when you buy a property, you have 30 days to renumber all the machines, which involves opening the machine and writing down some numbers and to set up the process. You have 30 days to do this, or 15 days or something like that. Well, the ever productive Stations people decided to do it right after midnight of the ownership. They're opening up the machines. Of course, what does everybody think they're doing? Tightening the machines.
Well, they also had this little thing that they fired all the employees.
Yeah.
That didn't go over well with the customers.
You know,
who were.
So I think Stations has learned the hard way.
They have. The Palms employees have said they have all been promised that they were going to keep their jobs. I'm assuming that you're not talking about the top five.
Of course. But they will, you know. So I overall, I see good things. For people, like I say, who listen to this show, there could be issues.
Now, Station owns, or Red Rock owns Station Casinos. It owns Fiesta. It owns Wildfire.
Santa Fe.
Well, that's a Station Casino.
Oh, okay.
Size-wise, it's much closer to a Fiesta Casino than it is to a Station Casino. Have they announced how they're going
to
brand it?
Well, they used
it
to be related to Fiesta. The Palms. Keep going.
Have they announced how they're going to brand this, or are they going to keep it an individual or anything like that?
No, I haven't heard anything officially or unofficially on that.
But, okay. I mean, it does seem like, you know, they have a couple of nicer casinos, right? Green Valley Ranch and Red Rock. It seems like I can't imagine them not trying to make the Palms closer to one of those.
Yeah, but you notice you just Fiesta. Said you just said something. You didn't say Red Rock Station and Green Valley Station. You said Red Rock right. and Green Valley. So what I'm saying is, my guess is the name will not change.
Yeah, and I would think that they would try to have that more upscale feel.
Right.
As opposed to making it a Fiesta type.
But no. My guess is they're totally going upscale on that thing.
Yeah.
In other Vegas casino news, there's the Fontainebleau, which was named after a palace outside of Paris, France. And there's the Lucky Dragon, possibly named after a Chinese restaurant. Not sure. if that's racist, I apologize. I think it's funny. I think Lucky Dragon sounds like a Chinese restaurant. All right. Now, what do you know about that, Jeffrey?
By the way, the Fontainebleau was named after the Fontainebleau on Miami Beach. Okay. When it was named, which was then named after the
Chateau.
Yeah, outside.
55
yes.
kilometers southeast of Paris.
Yes.
It's a lovely property.
Yes. So, when you brought up that we're going to talk about the Lucky Dragon, I had to admit I hadn't even given 2 minutes of thought to the Lucky Dragon. And I even had to look it up where it's going to be, you know. And I'm wondering why. I'm usually not this, and it's because I'm not in their market base. Neither are you in their market base. Okay, the place has.
Yes, he is.
That's true. Okay,
he is married to a Filipino lady.
Yes, but the market base is. They only have 230 rooms. So they're looking for tourists, but minimal tourists, probably only from California. But their main market is going to be that market you see in the Gold Coast, if you've been in the Gold Coast recently, or the market particularly on Saturdays, or the market you see somewhat at the Orleans, where you have a lot of Asian games, gamblers playing Asian games. And that's the crowd we're going to see at that place. And that's their market. And the place isn't that big. And it'll be like if you walk into California card clubs, you see, not all of them, but in some of them, it's a heavy Asian base.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Asians who are very into their community, Asians who speak whatever language at home. That's their market.
Well, the Fontainebleau, anything happened there?
The Fontainebleau, there was a story that we ran that was in the RJ that the Fontainebleau is near sale. Okay. I ran it past an expert this morning who said, I'll believe it when I see the signed contract. In his opinion, he says there is a relationship between people who are selling it have a reputation of sometimes stoking the fire to get a better price. That's the jet, and he's not the only person who's told me that. I said a year ago when I moved back here, the day the Fontainebleau opens as a viable property is the day we have come back. Totally. And so I would love to see the Fontainebleau sold and turned into whatever it had to do. And the article did look like that somebody had done some analysis on how much money it's required to get it up to snuff, and that whoever was buying it had a gaming background, which is the last thing you need as another loser in that property.
Mm.
So nothing will help, you know, will the Lucky Dragon help the SLS? It'll liven up the street corner. That's all it's going to do. Will Getling,
Genting.
Genting Resorts World property, which is on the grounds of the old Stardust.
Yes.
Will that help? Somewhat. Maybe. But will the...
Really? You don't think Echelon would be a huge...
Echelon will be great, okay? And if it inspires the rest of the neighborhood all the way up to the SLS to build up, it'll be great. But nothing would help the SLS more than a viable property sitting where the Fontainebleau sits right now.
Oh, yeah, I see, to help the SLS. But just for Vegas.
No. The Resorts World property, no Echelon anymore.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The Resorts World property will be a tremendous thing. But what I'm saying, will it you know, we'll still need something else next to it or further up, particularly with the Riviera closing, which didn't help the neighborhood.
I had been in the Riviera. I thought the Riviera closing helped the neighborhood quite a bit. But we'll go on. The away from Las Vegas, Boyd sold its interest in the Borgata in Atlantic City to MGM, who already owned the other half of the
property. To fund their new toys.
Borgata is the best performing casino in a city that's dying, with a lot riding on the election in November, currently considered too close to call, which may or may not authorize casinos in New Jersey, very close to New York City. This strikes me as a good time to get out of Dodge for Boyd. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes. It's a good time to get, to take your chips to the window. Will it pass New Jersey? I don't know. And also, how much will it affect Atlantic City? Right now, I lived in New York City. To get to Atlantic City from New York City was a pain. Okay, there were no direct trains. You had to take the buses or drive. And a lot of people in New York City don't own cars. So you were totally restricted to the bus system. And so a lot of New York City is not a huge market for Atlantic City. I mean, it's substantial, but it is not, for example, San Diego's, the amount of San Diego market that goes to the Barona. Okay. So how that will affect, yes, it will affect it negatively, but I still say there is large audiences in Philadelphia in that area that go to Atlantic, that keep Atlantic City running.
So
surrounding Atlantic City.
So you're saying it's a good time to cash out. What's in this for MGM?
It's a very successful property. The Borgata is the most destination property. People who go to the Borgata aren't going to Atlantic City. They're going to the Borgata. So other casinos opening up. Probably North Jersey casinos will be not as high its tier audience as the Borgata. The Borgata pulls in the creme de la creme. North Jersey casinos probably would not do this. So it will probably be the least affected. Also, it's away from the rest of them. It's not on the boardwalk. So how much other more casinos failing in Atlantic City will affect the Borgata, which is its own little world. So I could see why they did it.
All right, let's change
that. And $900 million was not a bad price.
All right, I take Richard and I would have to work for half a year to get that much money. Okay. PASPA, PASPA, the Professional Sports and Professional.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, an Amateur Sports Protection Act.
Yes.
It was passed in 1992, and generally speaking, with some exceptions, gave Nevada a monopoly on legal sports betting in the country.
Yes.
The American
It was Harry Reid's one of Harry Reid's proudest achievements.
The American Gaming Association seems to be coming out strongly in favor of repealing this and sports betting being expanded into multiple states. Is this significant, Jeffrey?
Yes. Sports betting moving across multiple states. The AGA only does what its board tells it to do. Okay. The board is generally made up of the large companies of gaming, be they vendors, be they
casinos or manufacturers.
Casinos and manufacturers. But the casinos that belong are generally the bigger players. Okay. Mm-hmm. Almost without exception, all of them own casinos in different parts of the country. So expanded sports betting. I haven't talked to any of these people. My guess on a good day is they feel that expanded sports betting will draw locals, particularly locals who visit bookie sites or do office pools or whatever, or play in a restaurant for the Kentucky Derby or the Super Bowl or March Madness. And will not generally affect those who make it a special event and come to Las Vegas. Now, a lot of the small independent casinos in Nevada, a lot of them are in Reno. You have much more of an independent scene in Reno than you have here. And they are, I assume, quite concerned about this. But the general point of the industry, and to give credit where credit is due, the way the AGA constructed how to go about this, I mean, they started first with, for some reason, coming out against illegal gambling, and everybody thought that was quaint, but why? And then they refused to take an anti-DFS stand, and everybody wondered why. And then all of a sudden, you know, all the heads of the Hydra met at one point to get rid of PASPA. And so it was a very bright on their part.
Yesterday, Monday, June 6th, was the first day of paying for parking at MGM properties. And if this isn't enough, MGM is also there's been two other pay more to go to MGM properties that have come out. One has to do with drinks. You actually don't pay more, you just get less. On the drinks, it used to be 1.5 ounces of booze, now is 1.25 ounces of booze. And apparently, they say the customers can't tell the difference, but if you sell millions of drinks, that's a lot of booze.
Well, now, those are the comp drinks, which it's hard to argue with something you're getting for free, but a much worse move is that for the people who walk up to the bar and are paying for the drinks, instead of an ounce, they're getting 7/8 of an ounce. So,
I've probably been in more bars drinking than you two combined.
And proud of it.
But we remember the bars we've been in, Jeffrey.
Okay. And say hello to Carrie. But the problem with the custom, if, you know, you said, they said the customers don't know the difference. Now, always be suspicious of any test where I'm trying to get a specific result that appeals to me. Okay.
Right.
This was not done by an outside testing agency that was told that whatever result you get, we live with. No, this was done in-house, and we want it to lead to this point. Okay. The customers will be voting on that loudly and longly, and the way they vote is they take it out on the bartender. Okay. And then and the bartenders are all union at MGM. So we will.
And being union means you can't fire them? Is that what you mean?
No, being union means they're used to complaining and complaining officially. And having their union complain that the MGM is basically making the money on the backs of their help. So how long this will last, I don't know. Okay. Now, on the parking issue, yes, they're charging for parking. Unless you're a member of the slot club. Unless you're there for less than an hour. Unless you have a Nevada driver's license.
Well, not, it's not any member of the slot club, right? You have to be at a certain higher
level
of the slot club.
Yeah, but not that high, okay? Or you have a Nevada driver's license. What I'm saying is they obviously have built a lot of exceptions to this. I'd be interested to see how many people, what percentage actually are paying by the time we get all said and done. Everybody in this room doesn't have to pay for MGM parking.
Right, but
okay?
Through the end of the year. I mean, that's the
it's
way you do
the
these
end of the
things.
Year,
you...
How much of that is, we don't want to say, we made a mistake, okay?
Yeah.
And how much, you know, so we're trying to get out of it as graceful as possible. So we'll see what happens at the end of the year.
Yeah,
I bet you they have no clue what they're going to do at the end of the year.
I would bet that 2 years from now, we'll all be paying for parking if we go there. And I mean, if it were me, you introduce it slowly, you make all these exceptions so it doesn't sound as bad, and now people get used to it, and then slowly you just make
please
it
remember
worse and worse.
You weren't blindsided by the reaction when it first came out. They were. They totally misjudged it.
Okay. Wow. How could they not think people were going to go?
Because, you know, sometimes when you're up here, you don't know what the people down here think. Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, look at the resort fees, right? Remember Caesars.
But resort fees were an industry-wide reaction to that people had found a way not to use the telephone, that people had found a way to avoid the Wi-Fi, that people had found a way to not view dirty movies on the television. Okay, so all that, that's what forced the resort fee. And it was the travel agency, not the casino industry, that forced it. Okay, so...
Dirty movies is the reason we have resort fees now?
Well, the number of people viewing any film on television has gone way, way down because they were looking at their little device. Okay? So resort fees came up. Also, another thing that caused resort fees is the online reservation services where you see 42 prices, you know, 42 hotels and 42 prices, and knowing full well that the guy, even for a difference of a dollar, if he doesn't have any affinity for any place, will go with this deal over that deal. So what I'm saying is, and that was a travel agency move, not resort fees. I'd be willing to take you up on your bet in 2 years. The situation will not have changed.
All right, try to keep it under 100,000. Richard doesn't.
Really? So you think 2 years from now, you don't think we'll all be
paying
for parking?
I want a part of this. I want a piece of you too, Jeffrey. how much are we talking about here?
Huh? I'll do the next three shows for free.
Oh, well, that's double what he gets now. So that's a bargain here. All right. The MGM for the trifecta has decided that they are going to do surge pricing on their menus on their restaurants. So if they have a restaurant where you have a $20 chicken parm on a Tuesday, the same meal will cost you $28 on a Saturday. And if you go to the website, it doesn't list the prices when you get there. It lists prices, and it is what it is. Now, we've been used to hotel rooms doing this. Uber drivers do this. But this is new in the hotel restaurants doing this.
I'd love to know what idiot, okay, thought of this way of explaining it, okay? For example, if the coffee shop decided to raise their prices on their menu, but offer discounts during the week instead of the weekend, all of us would have gone,
well, of course, okay. Of course, you that know. Would be the way the casino will spin it.
Well,
right?
You know, how did they manage to even get accused of surge pricing?
Well, you know, I'm sure that was just a journalist or somebody who said, yeah, oh, this is like Uber.
It depends on.
But I'm sure it was an accountant who said, well, wait a minute, why are we charging the same price? Yeah. You know,
this will be another trial balloon, and we'll see how far it goes.
I'll bet now, this one goes over. I don't think the public will squawk on this one.
They might. They might not. Please remember, somebody who's coming in on is Thursday night an expensive night or a cheap night?
It's only 24 on Thursday.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Don't know,
okay.
Yeah.
One thing. How do they keep the menus straight? Okay. I mean, you know, the people passing out menus are usually overworked, okay? So you could honestly see the wrong menu going to the...
Yeah, but I've been to a lot of restaurants where they have daily handouts in the middle.
In the middle.
If you went
but
to
that's specials. And they've always offered cheaper specials during the week.
No, but the whole menu would be, if you looked at it for tonight, it would say Tuesday, June 7th.
And are they doing this in their, are they doing this in their expensive French restaurant, or are they doing this in their coffee shop?
I don't know.
Or are they doing this in the buffet, which buffets frequently have cheaper prices during the week than they do on the weekends.
Right,
but they usually call the buffet on the weekends the prime rib or seafood buffet, but it's just their way of raising the cost of raising the price of it.
No, there's a lot of seafood there,
they do have different stuff.
The shark does very well, yes.
If you're not in the mood to seafood, just keep your eyes closed. That's just it.
Okay.
All right. We've been talking to Jeffrey Compton about various things coming in the casinos. Today is a split show. So a couple weeks ago, in Jeffrey's CDC Gaming Reports, there was a article about a young man, 40-ish, I guess, lives in England. He's a low-level poker grinder who is struggling with the question, what do you do for a living? And he wrote an article about it. And we thought that was some of the issues in there were entertaining, were interesting. I'm betting that a lot of our listeners will find a lot of what he talks about interesting. So we pre-taped this a while ago. So I recommend that you stick around and listen to the rest of it. Jeffrey Compton, thank you again for your insights.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for the bet that we get you three more times for free guaranteed, because we know you're going to lose. Thank you, Richard. I probably ought to do some commercials, though, before I head off. I was wondering how come it was going way too smoothly. Good. South Point has more than 10,000 gains, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. At the South Point, they're installing a new player tracking system beginning Tuesday, June 21st. They have condensed the four free play pickup periods so that now are completed prior to this time. This week you pick up Tuesday through Thursday. Next week you pick up Tuesday through Thursday. But the last one will be Saturday the 18th through Monday the 20th. The new semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, August 10th and go through early October. This time they'll be held in the Silverado Lounge, which is immediately outside of Don Vito's Italian restaurant. At the Palms, from now until June 25th, they have drawings Saturday night, 7:15, must be present to win. 20 winners share $10,000 each night. Every day between Monday through Friday, you swipe your card and receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP, play for prizes, Monday through Friday until June 17th, you earn Albertsons gift cards. Albertson is a supermarket. From June 20th to July 1st, you earn free play. The free play and Albertson's cards may be redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep the points. Every Sunday in June and on Tuesdays, June 7th and 21st, you earn double points on video poker and 10 times points on reels and video reels. For these multipliers, no limits. On the two Tuesday multiplier days, you also receive either the Albertson gift card or the free play for prizes. On Wednesdays, 500 points earns you free car wash. Thursday, the same number of points earns you a Brendan movie ticket. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Super Draw 6-Card Poker. This is a game where you pay 10 coins per line and you're dealt 5 cards. You hold the cards you like and then draw. Each of the lines, however, are filled in with a total of 6 cards rather than 5. In addition to the regular payouts, there's higher payouts for a 6-card royal flush, suited ace through 9, 6-card straight flushes, 6-card flushes, 6-card straights, a 4-of-a-kind plus a pair in the same hand, 2 3-of-a-kinds in the same hand, and 3-pair. That's called Super Draw 6-Card Poker.
Our guest in this segment is Steve Rowland, a name you've likely never heard before. He's a low-stakes poker grinder who lives on the southern coast of England. He came to our attention by writing an anonymous article in The Guardian called "The Secret Life of a Professional Poker Player. I'm on the Fringes of Society." Today we're going to be talking about that article. Steve Rowland, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Steve, when normal people, whatever that means, ask you what you do for a living, how do you answer?
Okay, well, normally I say poker player. I went through a phase of saying I was a writer and a poker player, or a poker player and a writer, because I got into playing poker through writing. I was writing a blog, and a fan of it asked me to write a weekly column from a beginner's point of view, and just to see how it went, see how quickly I picked it up and see how I got on. playing poker. So for a long time, I was a writer and a poker player. But after 88 weeks of writing that column, poker tended to sort of take over the writing, and the writing work just sort of dropped away. I focused more on poker. And then when the column ended, I was just purely a poker player. So, yeah, I tell them I'm a poker player.
You know, I found it funny, you in your article, you said that people say, how can you make a living gambling? And yeah. To me, my question would be, how can you make a living writing? I think it's much, much harder to make a living writing than it is playing poker.
It's brutal. It's brutal. It was good up until about 2008, 2009 in the UK. You could make a reasonable living writing, and it wasn't that difficult to get work. You know, editors would regularly come to me and offer me work and da da da. Since we had like the economic crash then, it became much, much tougher to make a living as a writer. But funnily enough, I suppose it's easier to make a living playing poker back then as well. Again, that's got a lot tougher over the last 2, 3, 4 years.
And you play mostly online, right? Not live games?
Majority are online. So, yeah, and I'll grind low stakes, maybe sort of anywhere between 6 and 10 tables, 7 or 8 tables normally. And when I play live, I'm trying to write a book at the moment where I go around the UK playing poker in every casino where it's available. And there, when I play live, the stakes are a bit higher, probably the same as 2-5 in America or 1-2 in America sometimes, depending. Depending what's going. So slightly higher than I play online. But yeah, this is part of the reason why I wanted to write that article for The Guardian, because people, you know, imagine poker players, you know, kind of go around the world and hang out with strippers and going off on yachts and making millions of dollars. But the reality is there are a lot of jobbing poker players who just kind of treat it as a bit of a grind and do treat it as a job, you know, where you earn, you know, kind of like roughly the average salary in the UK, or even sometimes slightly less than that.
Yeah.
In the article, you said you're on the fringes of society. What does that mean?
Well, this was kind of a piece that they pulled out, a sentence that they had used. I'd used it in my copy in the piece that I'd written, and they pulled this bit out and seemed to want to focus on that. And yeah, I'm not out there as some kind of neo cool character, you know, just skirting around on the fringes of society. But I think I meant that I don't live in a normal way. I keep unusual hours. You know, sometimes I'll be playing poker till 6, 7 in the morning. I don't eat at normal times. I don't have a mortgage. I don't have a wife. I've got divorced, and since then I haven't really had a proper girlfriend. You know, I can sort of do what I want in the daytimes. I can swan off and go away for a few days if I want to. And yeah, just I mean, I wasn't even registered to vote until a few weeks ago. But we've got this vote coming up in Britain about whether we want to stay in the European Union or not. So which I think is quite an important topic. So I've registered to vote for that. But other than that, and as a poker player over here, you don't have to pay taxes. So, you know, I fill out a tax return, but, you know, because my writing career is so so meager at the moment, I don't even really pay taxes. So, yeah, I do feel like I'm not like a normal member of society, I suppose.
I can relate.
Yeah.
When I actually want to hear, he doesn't have a proper girlfriend. I would like to hear more about your improper girlfriends, but I digress. Let's go back.
Yeah, thank you. After the show, I can tell you about
this. When you run badly at poker,
yeah,
what has that done to your physical and psychological health?
Well, I was really in the trenches. Last year, I was really, really in the poker trenches. I was running terribly, which was, you know, causing a bit of financial pressure, which led to I had really bad insomnia for a while and really bad tinnitus and couldn't sleep properly. And so when I sat down to play, I was tired and was making bad decisions, which then meant there was more financial pressure. her, which led to worse sleep and so on and so forth. I was just stuck in this kind of horrible loop for a while. And yeah, got had a bit of depression from that and really bad anxiety. Used to have these rivers of anxiety running through me and had some suicidal thoughts creeping in, etc., etc., etc. It did get really bad without wanting to be too dramatic. But I was on the edge for a while. And to make up for my losses, I was just grinding even harder. So I was playing far too much. I was playing 60 or 70 hours a week, which is not very good for the brain, I don't think. I seem to have got out of that now. I started running better. I started playing a lot better, playing fewer hours and so on, and seem to have got over that psychological hump.
Now, in the article... Yes. In the article, you said you found studying the ancient Stoics to be useful in getting out of this depression. In what way?
Well, I just think they said a lot of very interesting things, the Stoics, on all sorts of aspects of human character. And they put a lot of emphasis on wisdom and self-control and courageousness and trying to be free from suffering and all very, very good stuff to have in your psychological toolkit on the poker table. And I suppose one of the things that I most like that the Stoics said was that in life a lot of things happen to you and you can't really control what happens to you in a lot of instances. But something that's always within your control is how you react to certain things. So say you're sitting at the poker table. It's on the turn, you've got a set, your opponent's got a flush draw, all the money's got in. Now, you can't really control what that next card's going to be, unless you're playing live and you want to chop off the dealer's arm or crap the deal or whatever. But otherwise, that card's going to come down, whatever it may be. And you can't control that. But what you can control is how you react to that card, whether it's good or bad.
And you found that helpful. Any particular books?
Kind of like the classics, really. Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius's Meditations was really good. There's a guy, William B. Irvine, an American guy, who wrote The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, which I really like. That's a more recent book. But I still think there's a lot of scope to write about Stoicism, and I think there's a very definite connection between Stoicism and poker. And at the moment, I'm trying to write that book, we'll have to see how that goes.
Did Marco Aurelius address how to play king queen offsuit under the gun?
I don't even know how to play king queen offsuit under the gun. No, he did not. But
you might also investigate. There was a psychologist named Albert Ellis who wrote a number of books about rational living, which is very much in a similar vein.
But I think it's a very important thing for poker players, because I don't necessarily consider myself. I'm certainly not a great player, but I suppose I'm just about a good player. I've managed to make money at it for the last 5 years. But there are a lot of people far, far better than I am. But amongst my pool of people who I tend to play with, most of them have got either the mathematical game side of things reasonably sussed, and strategy things reasonably sorted out. But I think a big area that is lacking in people's games is the emotional side. And I think trying to conquer that emotional side of poker, if you're able to do that, it puts you at a huge advantage against your opponents.
Absolutely, and we deal with all kinds of professional gambling, but without question, that component is necessary for anybody who's going to try to make a living or take gambling seriously in any way.
I completely agree. I completely agree. Because if you don't, if your emotions run away from you, your mind becomes cloudy. You need to be clear-headed.
Yes.
And clear thinking in your decision-making. And almost emotion-free. You want to just want the game to flow through you and not be clouded and sullied by emotion. So, you know, conquering that. I'm getting there. I'm getting there. But it is quite a long road, to be honest, because it is an emotional game, you know, and gambling generally is a very emotive thing.
Yep.
Your website, stevewriteswords.com. I've read several of those articles, and you're good. You have an informative and charming way of describing things.
Oh, thanks.
If you had a crystal ball and predicted where you're going to be in 10 years, how much poker and how much writing would be in your life?
Okay. Well, I'd still like to be doing both. I would like to be doing more lucrative writing. You know, I write a poker column once a week at the moment. So hopefully in 10 years' time, people will still be paying me to write about poker. But yeah, I used to earn, you know, probably 10 times as much some days writing than I do generally playing poker. So yeah, I'd like to have more emphasis on writing, but I would still want to be playing poker very much, and preferably at higher stakes, more live games, playing at higher stakes, and seeing it, you know, being a recreational player maybe, or semi-professional. I wouldn't want my income entirely contingent upon poker playing, because I just find it kind of a bit too stressful, I think.
Do you play mostly tournaments or cash games?
Cash games, mainly. Yeah, I started off playing tournaments, and then sort of gradually switched to cash. When I play live, I play exclusively cash. Although that said, the last sort of 3 or 4 months, I've been trying to brush up on my tournament game, playing a lot of low stakes MTTs, because I think that's where the value is at the moment in online poker. I think it still is, or certainly on the sites that I play on, it is, it's in low stakes MTTs and mid stakes. But the even low stakes cash now is tough. You know, you get people doing stuff that is, you know, pretty advanced and sophisticated at, you know, even at the micros now.
Thank you, Steve Rowland.
Thank you.
Pleasure,
gentlemen.
There's a number of our listeners who've experienced similar despair to what you've described. I'm sure your story's going to hit home. Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Thank you again, Jeffrey. Thank you again, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.